Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fear besides. Temper all the times I've tried.
Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, happy Sunday morning to you, Tommy.
Well, same to you, Michael. We're getting back on track on our recording.
That's right. Get on schedule here.
And to get on schedule this week, we have a very special guest to add into our podcast with us.
We do. It's my favorite niece.
And my favorite daughter, but don't tell your sisters.
Yeah, you can't tell anybody that.
Taylor hey. Smurl.
Hey, Taylor.
Hi. And I will never tell a soul. No one will ever, ever know that I'm the favorite.
Good. That will awesome. Be our secret.
Just you and you and me.
That's right.
Well, I guess it's easy. Tommy is your favorite dad, which nobody can dispute that. But, I mean, I could be your favorite uncle, but you just can't tell anybody else that.
I won't. You're definitely my favorite uncle. I won't tell you.
Thanks, Taylor.
I'm glad I'm your favorite dad.
It was a tough competition, but you won out. Way to go, favorite dad.
If there's a tough competition, I don't even want to know about it.
Can I get you a mug that says favorite dad?
Yes, of all the dads, you're my favorite.
It's the new hot held holiday item this year. The favorite dad.
Favorite dad I ever had.
Number one dad in a competition of one.
Yeah. I never really thought about that. That number one dad, though, who are they competing with?
Oh, you only get the one. I don't know. I guess all the dads. That's very arbitrary.
I'm better than all the dads.
Yeah. Well, so Taylor is our expert witness today. I guess we'll call her that, an expert witness.
I like that.
Yes, you're an expert witness. You've been called before the court. Help us with our Christmas topic of Christmas spirits. And Christmas spirits, we're defining that as, alcohol.
Yeah, things you drink.
And we want to cover Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future spirits.
Yep. And actually, this idea, I think Mary came up with this idea, didn't she?
Well, we'll give her credit for it.
Yeah.
Well, she's an idea factory, I feel like.
Yeah.
She puts a lot of time and effort into trying to keep us on track.
It's good that you pointed out. She's given us a ton of episodes for Still Buffering, and we have not. I don't think we've ever said so.
Yeah,
hey, Mom,
always...
you're my favorite mom, too. Thanks for that.
Number one mom.
She's my favorite wife.
Yeah, I can't really say that now.
You actually have a list to draw from. I don't think any of them are in the top five now.
Here's the good decisions. So it's funny because we're doing this on Sunday, like brunch time, and I feel like I should be having a brunch cocktail, but I don't. All I have is coffee.
We had donuts.
Yeah, we did have donuts.
I got drunk on donuts.
See, I prepared a drink for myself because I thought you guys did the drinking podcast. I thought you had some tipples on the side there.
We do. We always are drinking on this. That's what keeps things going here.
Well, you know, I mean, it's legal at this current hour and beforehand a little bit, but when you could drink on Sunday morning is is something that's only recently been changed, correct, Michael?
That's right. Huntington, the voters recently in this last election chose they allowed brunch. It was called the brunch bill. So now you can drink in Huntington at 10 a.m. on Sundays.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It used to be they cut you off at 2 in the morning on Saturday night. And then was it 2 or 3?
I think it was 2.
2 in the morning on Saturday night. You couldn't drink again until 1 o'clock or buy liquor until 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm really happy now that I live here because I remember when I would come into town to visit and it's Sunday and I'm like, hey, I want to go get some brunch. I want to have some libations with my eggs. And couldn't do it. And I was like, what? What do you mean you can't do it? How am I supposed to have brunch without drinking? This isn't brunch.
That's the thing that I believe firmly, that brunch is the lie we tell ourselves to day drink, and that it's completely devoid to the whole purpose of it.
It's a good excuse.
Yeah. I just like the different drinks that you have at brunch, because they're always kind of, you don't drink a ton at brunch usually. Well, sometimes you do, but usually you don't. But it's usually like kind of different tastier cocktails and different kinds of creative things. That's why I like it.
My best brunch story is the one that from you, Taylor, about your friend that had the false wake up.
Yeah. That wasn't a brunch story with this kid. That was pretty much every day.
Oh, I thought that was brunch that you were at with Sydney and Justin.
It was a particular brunch. This is a term that I guess people could apply to their lives if you have the absence of it. This is somebody I lived with at the time, and Cindy and Justin, my sister and her husband, guys probably know, were visiting us, and we got up. You and Dad, you probably know them.
I've heard of them.
But we'd gotten to brunch at like a vaguely accurate brunch hour, like maybe it was 1 or 2. And about an hour into brunch, my friend was like, "Ah, I think that was a false wake up. I gotta go back to bed." And that was Sydney and Justin were very foreign to that concept.
A false wake up.
It's a false wake up.
Yeah, I didn't mean to.
No, you get up and you get like about an hour or two in your day and go, nah, absolutely not. This is not happening yet.
This is not working out. It's time to go back to the drawing board.
Try it again. Later.
Yeah. Start over. Man, that's a false wake up.
This is a test shot, right, Tommy?
Yeah, I'd never had heard the test shot, but I'd never heard the false wake up before. Now, Taylor, we usually release our podcast on Monday, and you had some very interesting information for us about, coincidentally, what we're releasing this libation episode on.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this is, you guys are talking about the holidays, but there is a wonderful holiday. It comes right between Thanksgiving and Christmas that the bar world certainly celebrates. I don't think enough people do celebrate it. It's December 5th, and it is Repeal Day. It's the day that Prohibition was lifted in America.
That's definitely a cause to celebrate, in my opinion. Yeah.
So Elliot Ness and his buddies quit busting open barrels of booze and everything like you see in the movies.
Yeah, Al Capone lost his biggest form of income. It was FDR that did it, and in celebration, supposedly he had a dirty martini. So if you're looking for a celebratory drink to have, that's a good one. But you know, there's a ton of really interesting sort of legal stuff that went on during, or illegal, that went on during Prohibition, and sort of in response to it. But it's just a few anecdotes. So the rules of Prohibition were, it wasn't that you couldn't drink alcohol; it was that you couldn't make it, you couldn't import it, and you couldn't sell it. See, people got around this in funny ways. One stipulation was that priests could still use it in any sort of religious service, could still use it. Suddenly there were a lot more priests and rabbis in America. Doctors could prescribe it. And this was also in a time, this was the 20s, that you know, if you had a headache or if you had a lot of stress in your life, you would get prescribed a dram of whiskey. And so doctors were allowed to prescribe, I believe it was a pint of hard liquor every 3 days, which is actually a fair bit. If we're talking straight whiskey, that's a couple cocktails for you to get you through.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and you could also go to pharmacies and get your liquor. Interesting enough, this helped Walgreens grow from 20 stores to 500 over the course of Prohibition because the pharmacy suddenly became super popular.
What are you guys doing tonight? We're just going to go to Walgreens, hang out.
Have a few shots.
Yeah. Have a dram or two.
There are also a couple terms that you'll hear. There are bars named this now, and they're cool, like, historical names. Have you ever heard Blind Pig or Blind Tiger? Basically, because to get around that law where you couldn't sell liquor, places would say they had a spectacle to see. You know, oh, come and see the Blind Pig. Come and see the Blind Tiger. And they would give you a complimentary beverage. So you would pay for the ticket to see whatever, you know, attraction they were showing you, and you would just happen to get a beer. Now, the attraction probably didn't exist. You were just getting around having to pay for the beer.
So it's like just a cover charge to come in, but the cover charge included your drinks.
Exactly.
So you weren't really selling the drinks. The cover charge was just to get in.
No, it was a complimentary beverage. Everybody's, of course, heard of speakeasies, and those were kind of the upper-class things. They had food, they had nicer drinks, but then these were a bit more of the, like, the everyman bars. They were the Blind Tigers and the Blind Pigs.
I had never heard that before.
Yeah. There were also cruises to nowhere, which I think is a really sexy term. You'd load up a boat with a bunch of people, and you'd take them out to international waters where they could legally buy alcohol, and everybody would get drunk.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, right? I just love that term.
You can also have monkey knife fights out there, too.
is that illegal on American shores?
It's kind of a gray area, I think. Yeah.
Monkeys are only allowed to use pistols on shore.
Yeah, but one thing's for sure. If you're offshore in international waters, you can definitely have monkey knife fights.
That's good to know.
Yeah, at least according to The Simpsons. That's where I get a lot of my legal knowledge.
The last thing I remember was that poor monkey trying to put the cork back.
What?
So mean.
That's the punchline from an old joke, but I don't think I'll tell it. I thought you probably had heard that. You must have forgotten it.
No. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's an old joke. It was a constipated elephant.
Okay.
All right.
I could put that together in my head, but I don't want to.
Yeah, it's too early, and I don't have a cocktail in my hand. I think if I had a cocktail in my hand, I might be more inclined to put that together. But yeah, we used to, sometimes we'd go on booze cruises. We didn't go to international water. We would just go get in the boat and just drive around, have some beverages.
Watch the monkeys knife fight.
No monkey knife fights. We weren't in international waters.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't have any monkeys or knives. So.
Huh.
Is that because I know obviously open container laws are something that apply, but I guess if you're in a boat, no one's going to stop you from that. Like,
no, not at all. Actually, that's probably one of the biggest pastimes while being on a boat is drinking. So,
well, now they've cracked down on that. Depending on where you're at, they've cracked down on that a lot. They have, you know, I don't know whether it's the Coast Guard or whether they have police boats or what, but they go out and they'll look for people drinking while driving their boats, and you can be cited for DUI for that.
Yeah, well, the thing that's interesting about, like, they call it BUI, boating under the influence.
And, BUI?
Yeah, they do, I swear, I'm not even
doing.
If you're on a pontoon boat, they call it FUI,
no,
floating under the influence.
You forget, I was an attorney that practiced law in the Florida Keys, so I'm well aware of boating and drinking, and drinking laws. But in Florida, well, anywhere really, you don't have to have probable cause to pull over a boat. It's not like they have to see somebody even drinking. They do what they call safety checks. So really, you have no right to not be searched on a boat because they can say they're going to do a safety check and anything they find is, you know, fair game. So whereas if you're in a car, they have to have some sort of probable cause to pull you over and search your car. But on a boat, they just do what's called a safety inspection. And so they don't even have to see you drink. They just pull you over and be like, hey, you've been drinking.
9 out of 10 boaters are usually drinking. Yeah. So I guess it's a pretty safe bet.
Yep. And as long as the person driving the boat is sober, it's not a big deal usually. So
it's fine to have, like, obviously alcohol open and out. I guess it's, you're outside, so it's open containers, but you're on your own private property, I guess, is how that works. Maybe.
Yeah. And, you know, people are always out in the water, you know, enjoying the sunshine or whatever, fishing, things like that. So, I mean, it's one of those things you really don't want to, like, go past a cop and lift up a beer and tip it at him, like, hey, how you doing? You
know. Cheers, dude.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just, although I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but you just don't really make a spectacle of yourself.
They look at, like, around here on the Ohio River, they have a police patrol boat that goes around and looks, and they put out warnings about that all the time.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that's if you're driving it. If you're on the boat just riding around, it shouldn't be a problem.
Right. Yeah, I don't think they get you if you're just a participant.
No, and if you're driving a boat too, you want to have all your wits about you because you got to plan out your starting and your stopping because it doesn't stop on a dime.
A professional baseball player, Major League Baseball player, just died in a boating accident there about a month ago.
Yeah.
With two friends. They were drunk and driving the boat at night and crashed into a rock jetty that was sticking out that they weren't aware was there.
I think those are called rocky groins. A groin.
Rocky groins?
I don't know. Never mind.
That sounds like a serious injury.
Now, I know you have to have a license to drive a boat, but what about what about the size of the boat? Does that come into it? Like, if I'm in a kayak and I'm drinking some wine, which I have maybe done in my past, can I get in trouble if I am drunk in a kayak?
I think it has to be motorized.
I think I've seen pictures.
pictures exist.
There was a terrible kayaking accident the other day. A young girl kayaked right over top of a swimming child.
I mean, I would presume possibly the worst thing that could happen is you flip over, maybe hypothetically, but you know, that's just not you.
Well, it depends on each state. Each state's going to have different laws and statutes that regulate it. I'm pretty sure most of them have to do with motorized vessels. So I think if you're under paddle power, you're probably okay.
You get drunk while you're canoeing.
It's okay. All right.
Yeah, I think you're probably okay on that.
All right, good to know.
So, but yeah, what do you do for celebrations for repeal day?
You know, I think you drink is what you do for repeal day.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, it's a real simple holiday like that. You know, there's nothing else around it. Maybe if you want to have some era appropriate cocktails, it's funny, a lot of the cocktail culture that we have now, it comes from pre-Prohibition, and that's when you get a lot of the stirred, like, booze-forward drinks, but during Prohibition, because we were making bathtub gin, we were making horrible, you know, like, homemade alcohol, we were putting a lot of stuff in it to make it palpable.
Yeah.
So that's when you start bringing in, like, a bunch of fruit juices, egg whites, like, a lot of the kind of fluffier, more finesse drinks come from trying to make horrible liquor drinkable. So if you want to help yourself to a really fancy high-end cocktail tonight, Prohibition is to thank for that. So maybe that's how you celebrate.
Go ahead, Tommy.
I'll say I had a bathtub drink once.
Oh, yeah?
What does that mean?
Well, Uncle Rick, your Uncle Rick, he made, I don't know whether it was rice wine or sake or something like that, in the bathtub and separated it. It separated out. He had banana leaves in there that separated out where it made it. And we drank it, although I couldn't drink much of it because I kept thinking the fact that this was in a bathtub, there were bodies in there before. Did the alcohol kill all the germs? I don't know.
How long did that have to take to ferment, I wonder?
I've never gone through the process, but he made it himself.
Did he bathe during this time?
I don't think he...
that was part of the flavor.
Oh, it has subtle undertones of Rick's ass.
Oh, that's what's that? Is that a little bit of Pert Plus I'm detecting?
Oh, man. Home distilling is something I will never try. I mean, one, of course, it's super illegal, but it's dangerous. But I also, actually, same friend that did the false wake up, he tried to make an apple wine at our house once, and he had this big, like, plastic container. It was under our kitchen table. I guess everybody just sort of forgot about it, and it exploded one day.
Wow.
Just this rotten, horrible smell. Like,
does that mean it's done?
Like, that's no, it was done before that, I guess. He made a time bomb. So
he was the apple drink terrorist.
Yeah, it's just not a thing that I am not responsible enough to do this in my house.
So, Tay, when you say that the booze-forward drinks are like pre-Prohibition, are those more like kind of your old-fashioned things like that?
Exactly. Actually, okay. Funny thing about the old fashioned, that when I was talking about the pharmacy serving booze, that preparation, like, you know, a little bit of whiskey, some bitters, a little sugar, that's a medicinal preparation. So you actually were getting those from the pharmacist as like a tonic. People would drink old fashions in the morning to like just, you know, that was like a medical treatment. There's actually a really funny in like the doctor's prohibition laws. There's a they quote a prescription, and it was take 3 ounces of whiskey to stimulate until stimulated. that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
Strictly for medicinal purposes.
I may have had my old-fashioned medicine dose last night, actually. So I'm feeling very good. Feeling very good today.
I'm so old. I remember when an old-fashioned was a newfangled.
No.
Some of these jokes, you know they're coming, but you just don't even think about it. Well, I think, does that kind of do it for our Christmas past?
Yeah, that's pretty much for our spirits past.
So now we move to
spirits present.
We got to do like a sequence. Ooh. where you flashed into the present.
That's right. We have to do something. Usually Scrooge is looking through a window when some of these things take place.
Uh-huh.
As he sees these different visions in his life take place. So
we're kind of looking through a window at Taylor through Skype.
Yeah, there you go.
So, can you do just like the Wayne's World? The boo, 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 boo. There we go. Now we're in the present.
Wow. What year is it? Oh, it's 2016.
Hey.
So what are we talking about for Christmas present?
Well, I don't know.
What's one of your favorite subjects, Tommy? Is it a traveler?
A traveler? Well, you see, you have these open container laws where everybody's against carrying them around. One of our favorite places to vacation is Savannah. And Savannah, they have down there the traveler. And they have, their bars have walk-up windows on the sidewalks so that you can walk up and get a drink without even having to go in the bars and carry them with you, because they insist you have a traveler when patrolling the streets of Savannah. I like that place.
That's a good idea.
New Orleans is the same way. You can, for most part through New Orleans, you can have a drink on the street. It's great.
Bourbon Street. It wouldn't be Bourbon Street if you couldn't drink.
No. You know, it's funny because, like, internationally, it's just not a thing. You can have a drink on the street. It's not a big deal. I'm sure other countries definitely have similar laws. But in America, it's such a novelty. It's like the places that have the freedom to drink on the street, like, that is an attraction in that city.
Oh, for sure. I went to law school in Jacksonville, Florida, and I had been there maybe a month, and we were going to a bar. I was going with some friends of mine that I was going to school with, and I had a beer in my hand, and I was just walking down the street up to the bar, and I was going to throw it in the trash can before I got there, and a police officer just popped out of nowhere. He's like, "Hey, what do you got there?" I was like, "Oh, just a beer." He's like, "Well, what are you doing? You're just walking down the street with a beer here." And I was like, "Oh yeah, well, I was getting ready to go in the bar. I was getting ready to get rid of it." And he's like, "Well, where are you from?" I said, "Huntington, West Virginia. Do you all have open container laws there?" And I was like, "No." He's like, "Oh, okay. Well, you can't do that here." I was like, "Oh, I'm very sorry." and threw it away. So he took pity on me and my ignorance. And I guess
it's just the opposite in Savannah. If you're walking down the street and a cop goes walking by, he'll say, "I see you don't have a drink." No, sir. I don't want to drink. Well, you have to. It's Savannah. Here, let me buy you one.
Have a traveler.
You have to have a traveler. And you have to say it like that, too.
That's why I'm.
If you walk up to the window and say, "Could I have a traveler?" They won't give you one. It's got to be a traveler. A-H at the end.
I thought about trying to make this podcast a drinking game podcast. You had to take a drink every time Tommy said traveler. But
that would be, no. Hey, lawyer, would that put us in any sort of danger for suing for the people that would get horrible alcohol poisoning?
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly why I decided to advise people not to do that. Do not do that.
I couldn't do that. I got to watch the football games the rest of the afternoon, and I had to stay some semblance of sober to be able to do that.
What? You're supposed to drink when you watch football.
I got to concentrate on the games. They need my help. I got to get my fantasy players over the hump here. I'm headed into the playoffs.
Well, Taylor, when you were talking about liability, one of the things I was going to talk about in this podcast is the liability that a bartender or a bar might have for serving a drunk person drinks. And those are called dram shop acts. So
exactly.
You're well aware of those, right?
Yes. And anyone that doesn't know where the name comes from, a dram is just a measurement of liquor. It's probably like a 2 ounce pour if you want to put a measurement on it. But yeah, they're really, really important to me as a bartender and as a bar manager, because that is a huge part of our job that I think a lot of people it's don't really think about, and it's definitely one of the less glamorous things. But it's basically if I allow someone in my bar to get, like, if I serve somebody that is beyond the point of intoxication, and they go out, and let's say they, you know, they get in their car and they crash into another car, while that person that got drunk at my bar cannot seek any sort of, you know, retribution on me legally, the person that they crashed into most certainly can.
Right.
Yeah, any action performed by, and it's not just an intoxicated person, it's also a minor. So if I serve one drink to a minor and they go do something dumb, it still can come back on me from the third party.
Yeah, the interesting thing about these dram shop acts is they are what's called strict liability. And so strict liability is, it's basically an imposition of liability on a party without a finding of fault. So if you're not, even if you're not negligent or you have no tortious intent, you can still be liable. So basically the person needs only to prove that the actual tort occurred and that the defendant was responsible. So basically strict liability is from things that are inherently dangerous. It tries to discourage reckless behavior. And it's like, so a good example of this is always like, if you keep a wild animal, it's inherently dangerous to keep a wild animal. So if that wild animal escapes and then mauls somebody, then you're going to be strictly liable for it. Even if you say, oh, I took every single precaution with my inherently dangerous wild animal. You know, it's not my fault. It doesn't matter. You kept a wild animal, so you're going to be strictly liable for whatever damage that wild animal causes. So another example that's kind of maybe like a more real world example would be if you hire a general contractor to do some work at your house. And that general contractor maybe goes and hires like a plumber to do the plumbing in your house. But that plumber doesn't have the right certifications or doesn't have the right insurance, and they screw everything up. Well, in that case, the general contractor would be held strictly liable for everything that the plumber did because they didn't make sure that person had the right things. Whereas even though the general contractor really didn't do anything wrong, they're going to be strictly liable for that. So that's kind of a different animal than your regular negligence type case, which is what most torts are, because negligence, you have to have duty, breach, cause, and damages. So you actually have to show where you had some sort of negligent act on your part. So really, in these strict liability cases, you can do kind of nothing negligent, but you're still liable for whatever ramifications of that are, if that makes sense.
That's where it gets really scary, because it's not even, you know, I mean, if there's a credit card record that says that I gave somebody, you know, eight beers and shots, like in a 2-hour period, clearly there was some poor decision making on my part, because just even abstractly, that's too much to serve. But if someone comes in and they appear fine, they get one drink from me and they leave, I mean, from what I understand, that still can put me as culpable if they go out and cause an accident, even though perhaps I didn't judge them as drunk and I didn't serve them to excess. They walked in with a lot already in them, you know?
Yeah, that is a scary thing, and that's what comes down to, I guess, the question of fact is how can you tell if they were actually drunk in that situation, or, you know, if you didn't only serve them one drink. I researched the New York law for this, since you live in New York, and the Dram Shop Act in New York, it comes under the New York General Obligations Law 11-100 and 11-101. And you read those together with the New York Alcohol Beverage Control Act, Section 65, and that basically makes up the whole Dram Shop Act, those things together. 11-100 deals, I think, with the minors. And 11-101 basically provides for a cause of action against any person who unlawfully sold or assisted in procuring liquor for such intoxicated person and caused or contributed to such intoxication. And the unlawful conduct is set forth in this Section 65, the other part. And that's the interesting part that kind of touches on what you're talking about. And that Section 65 says, no person shall sell, deliver, or give away, or cause or permit, or procure to be sold, delivered, or given away alcoholic beverages to any person actually or apparently under 21 years and anyone visibly intoxicated person. So the law in New York says that, you know, they have to be a visibly intoxicated person. So that really comes down to, you know, how can you tell if they're visibly intoxicated?
And that seems like a really... pretty gray area to, you know, have
have so much writing on. Well, and if I'm not mistaken, I feel like when I was looking over these laws, it's obviously for places that, for businesses, but it also used host. Like if you have, let's say you're having a private party, if you're the host of something, like even if you're having a house party, this could still come back on you from a third party.
Like if somebody, a guest was drunk at your house and you let them continue to drink and then they wrecked into somebody on the way home.
Yes. And maybe I'm fuzzy on that, but the wording to me sounded like it's not just necessarily a bar or a restaurant. It could also be you hosting and providing alcohol to other people in general.
Right. Well, the way it reads, I would agree with that. But I did a little bit more research and I found a couple cases that actually talk about those issues. One was D'Amico versus Christie. And this is a New York case. And that court, the appeals court said that this law does not apply to an employer and employee social function. So basically it was only in a commercial sense. So if you had like an employer who was providing drinks, I think in that case, it might even been they were providing drinks for them while they were working, which I want to get a job there.
Well, that's a lot of bars, I'll tell you, buddy.
That goes back to my beer taster job.
But yeah, this Dram Shop Act didn't apply. Your beer taster job.
Yeah.
And then also this other case, Plus v. Cooper, there was no liability for a mother who provided alcohol for her son and his friend, and they went out and got in trouble. So, but
really?
The thing is that means this Dram Shop Act didn't apply. So that means there wasn't strict liability. Now, is there still a negligence cause of action for them? Yeah, probably. But it's not that higher strict liability standard, that wild animal that you're keeping. You know, so, I mean, there probably still could be sued under a negligence theory. It just wouldn't be a strict liability theory. So that therein lies the difference. So,
all right. Well, going back to your example about the general contractor that had hired the plumber that screwed up your plumbing.
I hate that guy. Yeah.
Well, suppose that your pet exotic tiger that you had ate that plumber. Now who's responsible?
Oh, that's a sticky wicket. Well, first of all, who do I represent? Because that'll
whoever you represent, I'll look.
That'll change my argument about who.
I don't think you can represent the plumber now.
I don't know. Does he have the retainer?
Yeah, you'll see him again in about 24 hours.
Oh,
you know what? I totally ruined. I could have done it. Okay, so we're gonna scratch that whole wild tiger thing. It's gonna be a wild gorilla named Donkey Kong is who you keep. And then you have a plumber named Mario.
Maybe we could make a game out of that, Michael. That's very original.
Why did I not think of this before? That would have been a great.
And we could have a junior version, and that's when we roll out the barrels.
Yeah, well, maybe that gorilla, like he stole the plumber's wife and is holding her hostage in a castle. Wait a second, that's Bowser. Never mind.
And they're driving out into international waters to watch monkeys knife fight.
We have gone off the rails here. But no, in that sense,
we're not even drinking.
I'm really impressed by this. This is freeform poetry.
Yeah, a lot of people have described our podcast as freeform something. I don't think it's poetry.
Or 30 minutes of drivel.
That's right. So in that case, I think probably the homeowner would be liable to the plumber for letting his wild tiger or gorilla maul him. And likewise, the general contractor would be liable to the homeowner for having this plumber without the required things install the plumbing.
Well, maybe they could just both agree that the plumber got what he deserved and wash their hands of the situation, although not at their house because the plumbing's messed up.
Exactly. You can't wash your hands in that sink. He hooked it up to the sewer lines. The guy's horrible. So, yeah, does that answer your question?
I think that covers it, counselor.
Okay.
Well, one thing that in terms of liability and something that I guess it's a state-by-state thing that can kind of protect bars from this. You joked a minute ago about a job that lets you drink, but it's a pretty normal thing that bartenders in New York do drink behind the bar. Clearly, mm-hmm. some restaurants outlaw it, but more often than not, it's not a secret thing that goes on when no one knows about it. It's just an understood part of the job. You know, you do shots with customers, you do shots with regulars. It's kind of a normal thing. But there are states in America that have outlawed drinking behind a bar. And you can see how this would hopefully be in you know, in action to have bartenders that are making the best decisions and the best judgment calls.
Right.
When liability follows.
Absolutely.
You know, I guess probably that if I was an attorney and I'm looking at trying to sue a bar for something that happened, I probably looking at the policy of letting the bartenders drink when they're serving people might be something I would maybe look at, because if you're going to have somebody making a judgment call, and it's like, oh, well, how many drinks did you have that night? How could you tell if they were drunk or not? You don't know. You were drunk yourself.
Exactly. No, I mean, that's super true. And that's even we, you know, we live in a city where it's not illegal for bartenders to drink, but it's still a huge concern as far as, you know, having people that can be responsible and hopefully not allow patrons to get to the point that you have to worry about that. So it is, I would never want to necessarily have that law imposed on me, but I understand why it exists.
I don't like that law. I like the fact when I see a bartender make a drink and they take a straw and stick it in there and then taste it themselves to make sure it tastes right, because that makes me happy.
Yeah,
we want you to be happy.
I think, where was one place? I know Texas. I'm pretty sure Texas is a place where bartenders can't drink. But I wonder about that. Does that like fall outside of that? Because I don't want to drink a cocktail that my bartender didn't make sure was made correctly first.
That would be bad. Because if they don't even want to drink it, why do I want to drink it?
Well, if I'm sampling drinks all day long, by the end of my shift, I'm not going to be worth shooting. They're going to have to. They're going to have to Uber me home.
I mean, you're not taking a swig. You're sticking a little straw in it and taking a little. A little, you know.
Yeah, but like on a busy night, how many drinks do you serve a night?
I make over 100 cocktails a night on a busy night.
And you take a little swig of 100 cocktails, that adds up.
Yeah, well.
Well, maybe I'm an alcoholic. I don't know, I just thought of that.
I don't think it adds up. Nah, it's fine.
you run laps in between to work it off.
Quality control. No, you just eat. That's how you count it. As long as you just keep eating French fries, the drinks don't count.
My friend's
bartender
dad.
101.
Eat French fries. My friend's dad, he'd always say, eating's cheating. So.
Yeah.
Now you got to line your stomach with something before you go out for an evening of drinking.
That's true. Absolutely.
We used to always try to drink milk before we went out. We always heard that was the best thing, to have a lining on your stomach.
That's horrible.
You can't drink milk after having alcoholic drinks, so that doesn't work well.
I think milk shouldn't be consumed within like a 24-hour period, either side of drinking.
I had a problem one time where I had to until I could find an alternative. We were having a drinking party in college, and we had gotten into lime daiquiris. And we were making lime daiquiris and drinking them. And apparently I had a reaction to it where I started breaking out in red splotches all over my skin from, I guess, the lime that was in there. So one of the guys on our floor was in pre-med. And he said, well, Schmerl, you've had too much of an acid drink. You need a base. And I said, well, what's a base? And he said, well, like milk. So we went down to the machine downstairs and got a carton of milk, and I drank that and started fading a little, and I said, well, that was good, but I can't keep drinking milk after drinking all those daiquiris. And he said, well, let me test some things. So he happened to have litmus paper, so he starts sticking litmus papers in things to try to find a base, and come to find out, beer is a base. So I could start drinking beer, and that counteracted the buildup of the acid in my skin, and it all faded out. So as long as I kept drinking beer, I was okay.
God bless science.
I'm dubious of that entire story.
As old Callaghan, he straightened things out for me. He keeps litmus paper on hand.
can we have like a crossover input from Sawbones and have Sid tell us if that is at all good science at all? Because I feel like you've had too much acid. My prescription is beer.
We're gonna have her on after the first of the year, so we'll ask her about that.
But not an IPA. We need you to drink a Hefeweizen, something that's very, very nice and bassy.
Yeah, ace to the base.
That's funny.
It's true. I know you don't believe me, but it's true.
I believe you, Tommy.
Thank you, bud.
There are a couple laws, and Michael, maybe you know some more about this too, but they're definitely here in New York, and it's funny because I don't think they're super strongly enforced, but they are there on the books, and they're about unlimited drinks.
Oh, I like this. Yeah.
You cannot, like, it's anytime you're advertising, like, technically, you can't say, like, a bottomless brunch, which, you know, it's still a thing. You go to them all the time. They exist. Yeah. but it's basically selling alcohol at the point of less than half of what you would usually sell it for at your usual price margin. I guess the idea behind it is it's just at that point just encouraging alcoholism, and you're just, you know, your pricing in and of itself is dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, you can do a 2-for-1, but you can't do like $20 at the door, drink all you want for like 2 hours or something.
I've heard of happy hour laws. Is that the same thing?
I mean, I would guess these are the same, because I know a lot of the deals that they crack down on were happy hour specific. Like, you know, yeah.
I know Chicago actually, happy hour only recently became legal.
Really?
Within the past year. It used to be, I mean, people still had happy hour, but I think legally you weren't allowed to call them happy hour and have drink specials, strangely enough. Because Chicago is a very boozy town.
Oh, so. And I understand that the idea behind it, but it's funny that it didn't really have any actual ramifications.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone ever pursued, or in mass quantity, pursued the prosecution of these places.
There was one killjoy. He used to write all kinds of tickets for happy hour. Ah, there's a happy hour in progress here. I'm going to, no more happiness.
Yeah, I was happy till you got here.
Like how much of a jerk do you have to be to go around and shut down happy hours? Like, the name itself, it's like, geez, come on.
Yeah.
The guy's first name was Ebenezer.
Hey, bud, what's your problem? I'm saying it's Spicoli.
Just having a happy hour.
You know, one of the other things that's current right now that is making a big upswing is the craft beer industry.
Yeah.
And they've changed the laws about being able to, you can make beer legally, at least in most states, you can make beer legally at your house now, up to a certain amount. And then they have the alcohol percentages. And like in West Virginia, for so long, you had 5% beer. And then they changed it so that now the craft beers, they can have 10 or 12 or whatever they want. So the, you know, the percent of the alcohol allowed has changed. And then now they have where they sell growlers here. And I remember it was New York was the first time I'd ever heard of a growler. I didn't know what they were. You were telling us about it several years ago. And now they have growlers here. But they have strange laws with that. Like, I went in to get one last weekend, and they told me I could only buy 2 growlers a day. And I don't know, the guy couldn't tell me why or what that was supposed to prevent or whatever. And I would assume if Michael and I walked in together to the same place, we could each buy 2 growlers, even if we were going back to the same place to consume them. I mean, you know, I'm not sure what the reasoning is behind that. But
tell me you please stuck it to the man and went to Drug Emporium and bought 2 more growlers, therefore buying 4 growlers in one day and fighting the power.
I don't know. They wrote my name down in a notebook. I didn't want to take a chance. I don't know who sees that notebook. Yeah, they made me spell my name and wrote it down in a notebook. Now, be that place that I couldn't go back to. Maybe I could go to another one, but I don't know. I don't know all the rules on it.
I have a hard time believing there's like an international database of people we've sold growlers to today.
The growler database. Uh-oh, alarms start going off. He's bought three. He went to another store and bought one. Send the fuzz. Yeah.
Sir, we just ran your name through the NGDB. There's a problem. That stands for National Growler Database.
But I mean, they kind of have their own. I don't know if they think you're going to resell them or you're going to drink too much, or I'm not sure what the purpose is. But once you open those, you pretty much have to drink them. If you don't drink them by the next day, they're going to be start going flat and everything.
Yeah, then they're only good for like science experiments when you need a base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lived.
It's all about the base.
I lived across the street from a bar that sold growlers, and they had a really great beer selection, but it was always kind of a decision on my part, because, yes, I want to go fill my growler, but that beer will cease to be delicious if I don't finish that growler tonight, so I'm committing to something.
It's a commitment.
Yeah.
It's a commitment I'm willing to make. Yeah. I'm just that kind of guy. Hey, were you limited on how many you could buy?
No, but I never tried to personally buy more than one.
Why not? Aren't you related to me?
I mean, I feel like this is the same argument about the all-you-can-eat, you know, Chinese food place. Like, you push it, that there must be a limit there somewhere, but no one logically figures it out.
On The Simpsons, science says all-you-can-eat, not you-can-eat-all.
One of my favorite Simpsons episodes is when Homer sues the all-you-can-eat seafood restaurant because he went there and it was not all he could eat because he was still hungry. And then they settle out of court where basically he gets to sit there and eat all they want. And then the old captain goes, "Arr, come for the, was it, come for the beast, stay for the food.
They put him on display. Everybody watching him eat. He was like the blind pig.
Yeah, he was the attraction. Well, funny story about Tommy. We went. We did have donuts this morning. We went to Jolly Pirate Donuts, and so Mary and I were walking in, and Mary says to Tommy, because he stayed in the car, he's like, "What kind of donuts do you want?" And I think his answer was, "Chocolate covered devil food cake." And Mary goes, "How many?" And Tommy said, "As many as you can get." I believe that was your answer, was it not?
It was all that I could have.
All that I could have. That was it.
All that I could have.
I believe that. Last time we were home, you got donuts for us, and there were two boxes. There's one for everybody else.
One for me.
For you. It was all just the chocolate devil's food.
I love the chocolate-covered devil's food. They're the best ones. And once I start eating them, it's like I can't stop. There's no limit on them. One's not enough. Two's not enough. As long as they're there, I'll eat them.
There needs to be some sort of limit on that legally for you. I'm not worried about the growlers. I'm worried about
food. My chocolate-covered donut, devil donut governor is broken.
I'm sorry, sir. We've checked with the NDDB. That's the National Donut Database. You're too over your limit for chocolate-covered devil's food. We're going to have to take you in.
Somebody's got to do something about it.
I saw you did wash it down with a big glass of milk, too, though.
That's right. Milk does a body good.
It does. Strong bones.
Wash down all those donuts.
Well, I mean, does that cover our Christmas present?
You have any other tidbits for us or interesting anecdotes?
I mean, there are a couple. I feel like these are New York specific, though, and they're not really laws. They're just things that anywhere else, I don't think you'd realize why this matters. I guess I can ask you, like a BYOB restaurant, is that something that you guys are familiar with or run into a lot?
Not in Huntington. In Chicago, I saw them all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Michael could also vouch for, they have some of those in Florida, don't they?
BYOB?
Yeah.
Well, there's certain places you could bring, like, your own wine with you, and they charge you, like, a corking fee or something like that.
Well, but there's also, now, I've never been there, so I don't know this firsthand, but from what I heard, that they have laws down there concerning exotic dancing and alcohol. And so you can bring your own alcohol in. They won't sell it to you. What they sell you is mixers. You can't bring in mixers. You can bring in the alcohol, but you got to buy their mixers, which are extremely expensive.
Yeah. I think there's also, too, I think they sell, like, coolers for you. Like, you have to use their cooler.
Yeah, things like that.
So
you bring in your own booze, but they sell you other things, the ice, the mixers and things like that, that offset their, that make it profitable for them.
I think there's some other weird thing, too, and it might be a county-by-county ordinance, but I don't think, like, the exotic dancers are allowed to get completely nude if they sell alcohol. But as long as they don't get completely nude, then they're allowed to sell alcohol, or there's some weird
combinations that have to do with alcohol and nudity. Apparently alcohol and nudity don't mix.
I would argue not.
Usually one leads to the other. I don't know.
I am your daughter and your niece. I have no opinions on this.
Yeah, you've probably seen enough of that in the bars you've been in.
To
know the effects.
It's when I first moved to New York, I thought BYOB restaurants were the most amazing thing in the world. Like, there was anyone in New York knows what I'm talking about. I won't say where the place is, but there's an amazing kind of massive Indian restaurants all on one block. And they're beautiful and they're full of light up, like, everything, tinsel and stuff hanging from the ceiling. They're magical places. And when I first moved here, they were always BYOB, but you could even give your waiter like $20 and he'd go to the deli on the corner and buy you a six pack.
It was awesome.
The best. And I think it depends. Like, some of the older places, maybe people just look the other way, but the rule in the books here is if you don't have an active liquor license, you can't do BYOB. Hmm. You can't have any alcohol consumed in your place. Now, a lot of places, like I said, ignore this and just try their chances, but
See, I always assumed BYOB was for places that didn't have a liquor license, and that's they said, well, we don't have a license to sell it, but you can bring it in.
That was my understanding. Like, oh, we're waiting on our liquor license, but we wanted to open, so just bring in your own stuff. But it's totally, you can get shut down for that. Like, you have to have you have to be fully licensed to sell liquor in order to do the BYOB, which I do understand, because
getting a liquor license, especially in New York City, is incredibly difficult and incredibly expensive and takes a really long time.
Yeah.
So if you're a restaurant, if you're like, I want to be a little taco shop, like, all I'm ever trying to sell is, like, you know, $2-3 tacos. Why would I care about going through all these hoops just to be able to sell some cans of beer?
Yeah.
But if people bring in their own, that's great. Then people know they can drink here. They can drink for cheap. And then I sell my food. It's great for these businesses, but, you know, of course.
But that's an odd thing, though. Just, that doesn't go in everywhere because, I mean, that was a completely foreign concept to me. The first time I think I remember that, the time that Lynn and I came up to pick up you and Peter from, you know, remember he was going to school up in New York too, and we were going to bring you all back home for the summer.
Yeah.
And there was a place we went to, it was a pizza place that was near where you lived. And, Lynn, who grew up in New York, he went around and bought a six pack or two and comes walking in the pizza place where we had ordered the pizza and sits down and starts pulling out cans up, you know, popping them off the rings and handing them to us. I'm like, we're going to get kicked out of here. We can't do this. But they didn't sell beer there, and they didn't care. And I was sitting there drinking. I was a nervous wreck the whole time because I thought somebody's going to come along. We're going to get in trouble.
You know, I think, and Michael, this is probably true in Chicago too, but New York is a very drunk city. Like, I think there are just laws in place, and there are just things that are accepted here. It's just like, well, they're going to drink anyway. We just have to figure out how to control it and make it work to our advantage to the best of our ability.
Yeah, and when I lived in Chicago, I lived on the edge of Wrigleyville, too. And that might be the drunkest place in Chicago, to be perfectly fair. It's near Wrigley Field, and there's just bars everywhere.
But there's a lot of places, there's a lot of other places that should embrace that. Like, who wants to go to the beach and not be able to drink on the beach? Now, I can understand don't bring glass down on the beach and stuff like that, but if you keep it to cans and things, you ought to want to do that. That's what people want, a vacation. Part of these states' economy is the tourism. Encourage more tourism, you know, and that's, let people do that.
But I think that's one of those things that's very selectively enforced. You're not gonna,
oh, for sure.
You're not gonna come under somebody's beach umbrella if they're having a beer and be like, yeah, put it away. If you're out there raising hell or something like that, then cops are probably gonna.
Well, you worked as a lifeguard at Myrtle Beach for several years. How strict did they enforce it there?
It was kind of my job to police the area there, and I didn't really.
You looked under people's umbrella and you said, "Hey, put it away," did you?
No.
You sure you weren't one of those guys?
I promise you I wasn't. I was most likely the guy that said, hey, I get off at 5. You going to have a beer for me at 5:01? No, but I mean, it was mainly used as a tool to keep rowdy younger people under control.
Do like they did at the WVU game when I was in college. I went up and stayed with a friend and went to a WVU game with him. And they were sneaking fists of liquor in with them when we were going into the game. And the cop caught them, and their penalty was they poured half the fifth out on the ground, then gave it back to them before we went in.
That's the best penalty ever.
They just poured out half of it and gave it to them. We were going in. The game wasn't until 1. We were going in at 10:30 in the morning. But I thought, oh, they're going to confiscate it, and they're going to get in trouble. Hell, they just poured half of it out and gave it back to them.
I got caught trying to bring a fifth of rum into the University of Florida Stadium. And they were going to take me down to, like, the dungeon, I think, and, like, wherever they arrest people. But it was really crowded. And I was just walking along, and I did, like, the Bugs Bunny thing where he, like, puts on his right blinker. And even though I was just walking, and I just, like, kind of put on my right blinker and then just shot up the ramp to the left and was just gone. I was like, it's not going to find me.
Where'd that guy go? I thought you had him. Oh, well, let's go back. There'll be another one.
And that's called the ninja smoke bomb technique.
A couple summers back, a friend and I were going to a Joan Jett concert on Coney Island. It was a free Joan Jett concert. And we were like, well, we'll just throw some beers in our bag. And, like, also, I think we had a fifth of whiskey. And they were checking everything, like, just checking opening bags, shining flashlights in them. But we'd spent money on this. So, well, what do? We can't take it in with us. Not in our bags. So we went to an alley and drank it all. And then went to the concert. This is a poor decision, but we got it in anyway.
You got it in inside you. You smuggled it in. You were drug mules. You were alcohol mules.
Oh, what man. Did
he? I drank it before I came in. What are you going to do about that?
He's inside me now.
Pumper stomach.
Well, there's
was like that story of that lady that bought, oh god, it was like a couple $100 bottle of like really nice cognac or something at an airport, and she tried to bring it on the airplane, but I guess for whatever reason she wasn't allowed to. Maybe it was one of those, like, you know, if you like have a layover, sometimes you can't bring it back in internationally, you have to go through baggage check again. So basically this lady's like, well, between the option of throwing it away or not being able to board the plane, I'm just gonna down it. And so she just drank this bottle, this whole bottle, like right there in the middle of the airport. She was not allowed on the plane because then she immediately became super duper intoxicated. You've still got to admire that. That was where she's like, well, I'm not going to throw it away. I have one option here.
It's like, I can't imagine why drinking a 150-year-old bottle of Grand Marnier was a bad idea.
You think I'm going to waste this? Watch this. It's coming on the airplane one way or the other.
You think you're going to stop me? I'll show you.
I can't even like look down on that lady. I'm like, yeah, that's a bold move.
That's commitment.
That's slow clap for that.
That's some gastrointestinal fortitude.
And I would have gone to that Joan Jett concert with you because I love rock and roll.
Yeah.
Throw another dime in the jukebox, baby.
There you go.
That's a really good concert.
Yeah. Wow. She's rocked from way back.
Oh, yeah. Looks great. Never stopped looking good.
I used to smoke with her in the boys' room.
Really?
Is that one of her songs?
I don't think so. Smoking in the boys' room?
Didn't she do that?
No.
It was a remake if she was. She didn't do the original.
Though, isn't that like Motley Crue? Isn't that a dude band?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, Motley Crue didn't do the first one, did they?
Oh. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, well.
Somebody will fix that for us.
They will.
Uh-huh. Somebody will come to our rescue. Now, if you really want to see a chick that rocks out now, go see Lizzie Hale in Hailstorm.
Do you guys have a sponsor I don't know about?
Oh, no. I'm just saying, Hailstorm is great. And Lizzie Hale is the lead singer. She's like the new coming of Janis Joplin or something like that. She is really good.
I don't know Hailstorm.
You don't know Hailstorm? You don't keep up with it. And I kept telling you, Taylor, to listen to Highly Suspect out of Brooklyn. They just released their second CD here not too long ago. And I mean, their songs just rock. They are good. I don't know how we got onto that, but there you go.
I'll check them out. I'll look them up.
And that's going to do it.
Local. I'll find them.
Highly Suspect.
That's going to do it for this little section of Tommy's Music Corner.
If you want more recommendations, I'll be glad to give them to you.
Well, I think it's time to move on to Christmas Future.
Christmas Future. Look at your grave, Ebenezer. This is weird.
All right. What? Why is he all alone in there, Tommy? What? Where is everybody? He's all by himself.
Well, it's because they can't see him. He's dead now.
Isn't that where it goes?
They're all celebrating his death. He sees all these people, and they're all talking about someone that died, and they don't care. They're glad he's dead. And he finally figures out it's him when he sees his tombstone.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But in this case, we're going to talk about what does the future hold for alcohol? And Taylor had a very interesting one she was telling us about that I've never heard of just the other day.
Oh, yeah. So just now in New York, there's an alcohol delivery service. I think there are actually a couple on the market, but they've all come out in like the past year. And it's amazing. Because it's not just ordering from a store. It's like an app. The one I happen to use is called Mini Bar. And you go through, like, they give you the selection of a bunch of liquor stores, grocery stores in your surrounding area. And you can load up your cart with stuff from all over. And they deliver it within, like, 45 minutes.
They Uber the liquor to your door.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. You have to have an ID, obviously, when you get to the door. But this has been a thing in other places even before us. I don't know if there was maybe like some sort of law that was preventing this, because I can't believe it didn't exist before this. And there has been, I will say, once again, not sure of the legality on this because it always felt sketchy. There were like certain bodegas we could call and they would deliver whatever to you at any point in time. But I'm not sure if that was just something that, you know, they were doing that wasn't legal.
They probably were jacking the price up on you for it, too.
No, I mean, we would call and just get, like, a couple six-packs. Like, my roommate would get cigarettes delivered. Like, it was very, very much hard to believe it was
on the up and up. But
I was I was a delivery driver for this restaurant in Myrtle Beach when I worked as a lifeguard too. I had two jobs, so one was a delivery driver, and oftentimes they would say, "Hey," whoever take the order would say, "Hey, if the guy can bring by a 12-pack of beer, you know, we'll give him a good tip." So it would be on the ticket, like, if you want to bring this guy a 12-pack of beer, he said he'd give you a tip. And you better believe I would always do that. I would deliver beer. One time I think I took like a 2 gallon of milk. Like, I mean, I would, anything you want, I will bring it to your door. Like,
just pay me.
Yeah, just pay me and give me a good tip. I'll be there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people understand all the money that there is in human laziness. Like,
yeah.
There was a pizza place in my neighborhood, and I don't think they're allowed to do this anymore, but for a while they were doing this like hungover special, and you could get a pizza, some Gatorade, and some Tylenol delivered to you.
The Tylenol is probably not allowed, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I think that was the part, because that's a big thing, but it was great. I mean, you know, it got away with it for a while.
But when I think of all those times that we'd have some kind of get-together or party or something, and you'd run out of beer, and everybody's looking around like, who's the most sober to go pick up some more? You know, you're sitting there going, B-double-E-double-R-U-N, beer run. We got to get that beer run in. And all you got to do now is, if you're in New York, is call Uber or call with that service and they Uber it to you. That would be great.
Yeah, I'd love that.
And it does seem like, but that is a good point, because I do think it is a safe thing. And there are places that deliver like late into the night. The first time I was looking, I was checking out places at like 1 or 2 o'clock when I was getting off of work. And I was like, man, it'd be nice if I had a bottle of wine at home, but I don't want to go to anywhere. So let's see if this is a thing. But it totally is. It keeps you off the streets, keeps you out of your cars. And I mean, as long as you're making sure you're delivering it to, like, I guess that falls into the same stipulation, though. The delivery driver has to A, ID the person, and B, make sure they are not visibly intoxicated.
Well, I don't know.
It seems like they could get fuzzy real fast, though.
Well, not only that, you don't know who's there. If they're in your restaurant, you know who you're serving. If you go to somebody's house, all you know is the guy that comes to the door. You don't know who else is in there.
Well, but think about someone going into a liquor store. Like, I can walk into a liquor store and buy 6 bottles of rum, and they don't know if I'm coming home and giving it to my 16-year-old little sister.
That's like, true.
That's not their fault.
Now, they will only let you buy 2 growlers, though.
Yeah.
See, that's what I've definitely bought, like, and this is because I'm a bartender, not because I'm an alcoholic, but I've bought, like 10 to 15 bottles of hard liquor at a time. And nobody has ever questioned me. I do not understand why those 2 growlers are.
Oh, well, that's like when we get ready to go on vacation. We always load up a shopping cart full of stuff to take with us, you know, and it's usually just me and mom in there picking it up. So they don't ever question it. Yeah, there go that kindly old alcoholic couple.
You know, this is in relation to Christmas future. I didn't realize this till I was looking up the laws. Obviously, it's impossible to find a liquor store open on Christmas Day. But that's because it's illegal.
Huh. Christmas Day is illegal?
Yeah. I mean, at least in New York City. I assumed, obviously, I don't ever want somebody to feel they need to be working in a liquor store on Christmas Day. But it also seems like somebody would say, like, heck, I'm not going anywhere. I will open that store. But no, it's
well, now, the mini marts, you know, or whatever, the gas station, grocery store things. Now, there's several of those open around here. And I'm sure, I mean, I don't remember ever trying, but I would bet a dollar to a donut that you could go in there and buy a 6-pack of beer if you wanted to.
Oh, I'm sure you could, yeah.
Can I ask you, and this is totally aside, a dollar to a donut, what does that mean? Am I betting either, like, I'm putting down a dollar and you put up a donut, and whoever is right gets the dollar and the donut?
That's right.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. The donut may refer to the fact that it's shaped like a zero. So like one to zero. Maybe.
You think? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not taking this bet. There are no actual donuts involved.
Yeah,
we've got some. I got one or two left.
There's no more chocolate covered devil's food, though. They're all gone.
It wasn't that I couldn't eat them. I just ran out of time. I had to get down here so we could get started recording.
Yeah.
Well, I know Christmas future hopefully is going to hold in the cards for me. And that might be a couple of tasty cocktails that you might concoct for us around Christmas time.
Most certainly.
Oh, I'm excited.
Oh.
I love Taylor's cocktails.
I've workshopped one just for you guys on Court Appointed.
Oh, did you?
Yep. I was trying to think of like something to represent you dudes. So of course, Dad, I only associate you with Guinness.
Yes.
Michael, I'm so sorry, but you will never not be associated with Jägermeister.
Thanks, Tay.
As you can imagine, those are two interesting ingredients to start off with. I won't read out the exact measurements, but I made a little tipple with some Jägermeister, some homemade coffee-infused spiced rum, a little bit of bitters, and then topped it off with some Guinness. And it's quite a good holiday drink. Very, very warming, very spicy, but it does have the coffee, so it can, you know, wake you up in the morning. And it is a little lower in alcohol than your average cocktail. So since it's a good, like, getting you going drink, I would like to call it the preliminary beering.
I like it.
Preliminary
beering. I'm sorry
beer.
For that. No, that's I'm not good. Sorry for that.
That's perfect.
I'm not sorry. That's great.
Yeah. Preliminary beering.
So a little bit of coffee to go with your alcohol, so you'll be the world's most wide awake drunk.
Yeah, that's important. This cancels each other out. It's not drinking if you have coffee alongside of it.
That's right.
Everybody knows that.
I used to drink vodka and Red Bull. They had that nice counteractive.
Oh, that makes my heart. That makes my heart
no,
hurt.
No. Dad, I remember the New Year's when you discovered vodka and Red Bull. I remember it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and you were just sitting in your chair, like your knees jumping up and down, like, "Oh, this vodka Red Bull. This vodka Red Bull's great. I've had like 9 of these, and I feel great." I'm like, "Oh, wow."
Keep the music going. Crank it up.
Just wait till tomorrow.
No.
Well, I think that's going to wrap up our show, and that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs. Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a
you could have joined us on that, Taylor. It would have been all right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was like a you guys thing. I don't
know. No, you can do it too. Here you go. We'll do it one more time for you. Ready? Legal Briefs. Briefs.
That felt good. Thank you.
Good job. Riley did it with us when she guessed it, so we had to let you in on that too.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where we talk about different topics, and it's kind of reinforces some of the things we talked about. So it's like a little quiz show.
So you get to be my helper this time. Usually I'm hanging out there on my own, but you can help me if you know the answer.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
So the first one is, and Tommy's looking at my notes now.
I can't see that far. I don't have my glasses on.
Dram shop.
Dram shop are the laws that pertain to liability in serving liquor, right, Tay?
Yes. Oh, I was like, I don't know the answer. Can I super duper help you out?
Yes, yeah. Go ahead, do it.
But I just want to quiz you further, actually. What do you mean liability?
Liability.
I'm switching teams. That's a vague answer. That's a C-minus answer.
A C-minus. Well, I'm with a C lawyer, so I thought that's all I have to give is a C answer.
Hey, D equals degree. I think Taylor was
your responsibility in serving those that may already be drunk and what they would go out and what you would assume.
And what is the level of liability under the Dram Shop Act?
It's that strict accountability or something like that.
Strict liability. Strict
he gave liability. You the second word.
Yeah.
That's good. You messed that one up.
That's the way these things work.
And so strict liability is where there's something that's inherently dangerous, and there's actually, even though you might not...
You don't have to prove other factors about it.
Yeah, exactly. You're strictly liable.
It's like an automatic do not pass, go collect 200 or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much. Like if you have a pet gorilla that gets free and kills...
That eats your plumber.
Kills your plumber.
Named Mario.
So I didn't talk about this term, but I'll throw it out there anyway.
Oh, he always throws in a one on me that he hadn't covered just to cross me up because I'm just too good. I'm always at least half right.
Or half wrong, depending on how you look at the glass.
That's right. Depending on if the glass is turned over.
Tort law, or tort. What is a tort?
That is a small pastry, sometimes with fruit. No, I guess not. It's a lady of the night that hangs out on a street corner.
That'd be a tart.
Oh, still on the wrong thing.
No,
a tort is you offend somebody.
Well, a tort could be offending somebody. It's a theory under how you sue somebody in a civil court. So negligence would be an example of tort. So I said tort, but I didn't explain what it was. So a tort is, for example, negligence if you sue somebody, which is the other part of strict liability. So if somebody's not strictly liable for something, they could still be negligent, and the thing you would sue them in would be called a tort.
So well, you know what happens if they get acquitted of it?
What's that?
You sue them again, and it's a retort.
Yeah, I will say when you kept using that term, I was aware in my brain that you weren't talking about tiny delicious cakes, but that is as far as my brain recorded them.
That's pretty much what I got out of it.
Cake? No, not cake. Cake? Cake? No, not cake.
But it made you think of it. Small alcohol-infused fruity torts. Tarts. Mm-hmm. Torts.
They're good. Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. That was a short one today.
Well, Taylor, we're sure glad you joined us for this, and your expertise in the spirits category.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great having you, and I'm really excited to try a preliminary beering.
Yeah, I'll perfect it by the time I get home. You guys can give the recipe to your fans, audience.
We can't wait till you get here on the 21st.
Oh, the 21st?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Been there for like a whole week.
Yeah.
Cool.
We don't usually get to spend that much time with her, and we're looking forward to it. We miss you, and we love you.
Thanks, Dad. I miss you, and I love you, too.
Good.
I'm real sentimental all of a sudden.
Well, I got you right there. I can't pass up the opportunity.
And everybody listening on the 5th, like, seriously, you've got a really totally great excuse for getting super-duper sauce tonight. It's repeal day. Celebrate your freedom to drink as an American.
Just skip work and go get hammered.
Okay, that's right. You can't drink all day unless you start in the morning.
There you go.
Somebody told me that one time. I don't know. Well,
that's right. And watch out for torts on the street corner.
Yeah. They're sticky if you step on them. And tarts, too. Watch out for the tarts. Tarts and torts. Oh, that might be kind of an interesting mashup for a bar. Tarts and torts. Or
tarts and torts.
Tarts.
Yeah, the tarts are in the back room and the torts are up front.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be like a cute name for a pastry shop that has like illicit purposes after hours.
Yeah.
like Ward's Donuts.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, we'd come up with the idea for a donut shop that we're going to call Sinkers and Floaters. But
that's
not
appealing. No.
Did you all never hear that story about Ward's Donuts? It was the donut shop.
Oh, yeah.
It's not anymore. But supposedly you go and ask for change for a penny.
Oh, I remember
that. And they ushered you into the back room.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's Huntington Urban Legends.
Yeah. They did have good donuts. You'd get them coming right off the wheel. And they would melt in your mouth. I mean, you didn't have to chew them. You just take a bite and they just melt.
There's a wheel involved in donut making?
Well, yeah, they like would go around through the oil, the hot oil, and it'd go around and pull them up back up.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all mechanized. You don't have like people doing it.
Well, I think it's going to do it for this week's episode of Donut Talk.
Donuts and torts. Tarts.
Donuts and law.
There's donuts sprinkled throughout this episode. That was a lot of donut mention, actually.
There were.
It's because we ate them right before we came down to do this.
Yeah.
We were still thinking about them. There's some left. I can't wait to go back.
Well, thanks, Tay.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me on.
We appreciate it, Tater.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sloan. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.